Shakespeare's Insults, next on Soundings. This is Wayne Pond at the National Humanities Center. Join me now for a conversation about the art of the insult in the plays of William Shakespeare. Cynthia Ochen and Wayne Hill of Cambridge University are here to talk about their new book, Shakespeare's Insults, Educating Your Wit.
You blunt monster with uncounted heads.
You unlettered, small-knowing soul.
Vile lady.
Liege of all loiterers and malcontents.
You are as a candle, the better part burnt out.
Lord of folded arms.
Well, the truth is you live in great infamy.
Halfpenny purse of wit.
You're a good luster of conceit in a turf of earth.
Rat without a tail.
Now I step forth to whip hypocrisy.
Some please, man.
This is a piece of malice.
Cynthia Ochen and Wayne Hill. They'll be back in just a moment with a conversation and more examples from their new book, Shakespeare's Insults, Educating Your Wit. Partial funding for this program comes from Carolina Power and Light, where listening generates powerful ideas. Soundings is a cultural affairs service of the National Humanities Center. You rabble of vile confederates, you crusty botch of nature, roast meat for worms. In a time when the art of the insult has mainly succumbed to obscene gestures or mere vulgarity, we don't often hear colorful put-downs like those. As a result, a new collection of imaginative stings and barbs is all the more refreshing. But the basis of the work is anything but new. Shakespeare's Insults is the work of Cynthia Ochen and Wayne Hill of Cambridge University. They note that in only 38 plays, the Bard of Avon managed to contrive more than 10,000 personal slams. Working from that base, Wayne Hill and Cynthia Ochen present approximately 5,000 examples, organized around topics such as name-calling, eye-catchers, foul emanations, caterwauling, basic badness, botchers and lightweights, expletives, unwholesome ingestions, and windbaggery. This was, of course, the stuff of Elizabethan popular entertainment, but Shakespeare's insults are also filled with witty ideas and historical elements, giving them an artistry and durability that reach across the years. Cynthia Ochen and Wayne Hill will talk about those qualities in just a moment. For openers, I ask them to describe how Shakespeare's insults came about.
Well, Shakespeare's Insults, Educating Your Wit, began as an accident. We'd gone to see a play and got into a bit of an argument afterwards and found that quotes that were fresh in mind were useful in the argument. And so I think Cynthia said something to me, and I replied back, and she replied back, and we said, my God, there's something here. Uh-huh. So we looked at one play, and then another, and another, and finally we decided to read through the complete works and see what there was for insults in the complete work of Shakespeare, and didn't think it had been done. We looked really for a source, and there wasn't one.
Uh-huh. I'm amazed that the libraries aren't full of PhD dissertations chronicling and explaining endlessly Shakespeare's insults.
Well, we expected that there would be such a thing and scoured the university library, and there was nothing. So just because these are such funny bits of language, like, thou art so leaky, we must leave thee to thy sinking, or you idol of idiot worshippers, they just have this melody, this beauty of wit about them that hadn't, I think, got its proper sort of moment in the limelight. Uh-huh. So we collected them all and passed them around among friends, and we had such a good time with them that they said, publish the thing, get it into print.
Cynthia, what do you mean when you and Wayne Hill say that we need insults? That humanity, that there's something in our nature that thrives on the insult? What about that?
Well, I think there is. I think that conflict is about us all the time, and in fact, that's what drama is all about, is conflict and the resolution of that conflict. And so You know, it explains why Shakespeare's insults were such an important part of his plays. And mm-hmm. looking through the plays, we found over 10,000 insults.
Absolutely amazed. There are, 38 plays altogether?
That's it, yes.
And this book is 200 or 300 pages. Mm-hmm. And you say that you used half of what you found?
Just half. We found about 10,000 examples. And so obviously there's some importance there. They're not just filler or uh-huh. something. There's something significant as to why they're there, besides being so enormously funny and appealing, mm-hmm. and indeed that's how the entire project started.
Has Shakespeare, has he ever been topped? Let's put it that way, Cynthia. I mean, did he say it all, or do we move uphill or downhill when we look at the history of insults after the Bard himself?
We have looked a bit at the history of insults and compared Shakespeare with some of the other authors that we're all familiar with, but I think Shakespeare had something for everybody. The full range of insulting is in his plays, all the way from Timon of Athens, which is very acerbic, to something very light and melodious, mm-hmm. like Midsummer Night's Dream.
Can you give me fire off a couple of quick examples here? I noticed that in the organization of your book, you talk about general insults and name-calling and one thing and another, and then you get into the plays themselves. Wayne, how about it?
Well, they change. The favorite ones change from day to day, moment to moment. they tend to be really useful. And coming over today, I had an occasion to pick a new favorite for today, and that is I called Cynthia Fiend of Hell, just out of spontaneity.
And I sort of thought Wayne today was a quintessence of dust.
The quintessence of dust.
And you're not worth the dust. The rude wind blows in your face.
Well, you're not worth, your face is not worth sunburning.
You converse more with the buttock of the night than with the forehead of the morning.
Well, you wear your wit in your belly and your guts in your head.
At least I don't speak an infinite deal of nothing.
Well, more of your conversation would infect my brain.
What folly I commit, I dedicate to you.
Why is this book useful to teachers? We'll come back to some more examples in a few minutes. But the subtitle, Wayne Hill, Cynthia Achin, is Educating Your Wit. How about it?
Well, the book itself was spontaneous. And the response has been spontaneous as well. The book was never publicized, for example, but it uh-huh. made the bestseller list in Britain. It's gone into its 9th printing already in about just under 2 years' time. The spontaneity of its educational value came in letters and phone calls from teachers in Britain, particularly three of them around Cambridge, along with an officer from the National Association for the Teaching of English, who thought this book is so useful in the classroom to engage young people in the language, which is typically the thing that puts people off of Shakespeare.
Oh, that the students speak of the olden days, whatever
yes.
that means.
Yes.
That's
yes.
when Shakespeare wrote. So
and that's anything before, 1985 or something like that these days. But they said that they needed more. They, in fact, insisted that we keep, you know, that we work further and produce something more. Mm-hmm. A teacher's guide is what they wanted, to make this idea even more practical in the classroom. So mm-hmm. we put them to work, along with the director from the National Theatre, and there now is a teacher's guide, a photocopiable exercises that start with the way meaning is developed and the control that students have on the meaning that their words carry, mm-hmm. all the way through into the way the body carries meaning and dramatic method carries meaning into the plays themselves.
Is it not enough, Cynthia, that the younger generation is as insolent as it is? You're going to supply them with further ammunition here?
I think we will, but I think we'll teach them something more besides. I think most children use insults all the time. If you just overhear a conversation, they're always insulting one another.
Sure.
And typically students are required to read one of these plays rather than see it performed. So it's not just the language that puts them off, but having to read it and study it that way mm-hmm. by approaching it through the insults, which are short bits of something that's usually quite funny, and then being able to discuss what that insult means and how it affects the dramatic development of the play, they're able to relate to the play in a way that they wouldn't be able to you know, just sort of straight on studying, you know, what happens in a very factual way.
I mean, don't we go back here to who was the literary critic who said that we have to entertain and we have to inform at the same time? Well, if you do that in equal measures, you will succeed.
Indeed, and Shakespeare knew that, and he knew he would be, or his actors, himself included, would be wearing vegetables in various stages of decay if he failed to do one or the other. And he had some very good arms in the pit, you know, waiting to put the odd tomato on the bullseye. So he knew what was required in terms of entertainment, and to try to take a child out of the child's own environment and life, and the give and take that the insults and the striving for comparing oneself with others and that whole awkwardness of growing up, which involves insult and putting oneself above others and below others and see, you know, all of that difficulty, insisting that it stay out of the classroom. And now we're going to talk about this hermetically sealed bard from 3.5 centuries ago is a killing combination. And so to bring the energy of insult that's being used all the time into the classroom is quite dynamic.
Was Shakespeare original in his usage, invention, is that the proper word, or was he simply sort of passing on to us, to his own generation, and now here we are in the 1990s, the recipients of his insult and his wit? Cynthia?
I think both. I think he really took some very common words like villain, for instance. We have 3 pages of how he's used the word villain in various insults. And, you know, just by adding various adjectives, he's come up with an enormous variety.
So this is just one exercise that's in the book. It just... all the sorts of villains. Horrible villain, villain of the earth, soulless villain, secret and villainous contriver, trusty villain, whoreson, senseless villain, dissembling villain, hungry villain, lean-faced villain.
Or chaffy lord, not worth the name of villain. I mean, it goes on and on. And then again, on the other hand, he's used some very original things, you know, to call somebody a crusty botch of nature, I don't suppose was something people would say normally.
There's such a rhythm, and just the beauty of the poetry there is something that's Shakespearean.
And the density of expression, I think, really makes us unique.
Is this book going to be useful I'm tempted to say serious literary critics, and by that I mean no disrespect to your work. Have you, for example, been accused of trivializing William Shakespeare? What about that?
Well, we haven't been accused of that. In fact, we were a bit...
Should I accuse you of it?
Well, you know, first off, we were expecting that. That's the thing that we expected most.
Right.
And so when the telephone calls started coming in after we published a few hundred copies and dropped them off at the Cambridge bookshops and immediately went on holiday, which is the opposite of what good publishers do. Mm-hmm. We ignored all publicity and didn't do any at all. We thought that some of those would be very strong criticism, that we'd stepped on sacred soil with sullied boots and that people were going to come after us. In fact, there's one organization called Bookwatch, or Books in the Media, and we thought, my God, this is a police organization. Have you ever heard of one?
Sounds like the French Academy. Oh, they want to keep all those nasty English words out of the vocabulary.
We thought we knew who'd be listening to this book, but we didn't know who Bookwatch was, and we refused to answer all calls until we found out that they're the ones who track the bestseller lists in Britain. So... But to answer the question more directly, we've had nothing but positive comments from very serious people who, I suppose the most critical thing they have ever said really about it is, God, I wish I'd thought of that myself.
That's a high compliment. We're talking, Wayne Hill and Cynthia Ochin, about your book, Shakespeare's Insults. The subtitle is Educating Your Wit. Tell me how you organize this. We touched on this a moment ago. Name-calling, general usage. Cynthia, tell me about this.
Well, after we realized that our manuscript was going to look like a telephone book instead of a useful pocketbook, we decided to choose the best insults. And part of what we did was realize that there were different kinds of insults there and that you could approach them in different ways. So we really looked for how Shakespeare approached the insults. What we found was that there were a lot of insults embedded in other things that wouldn't be insults. And so the first section of the book is name-calling, where he's taken lots of sort of two- and three-word insults like you base football player or lily-livered action-taken horse and glass-gazing super-serviceable finical rogue, one drunk inheriting slave brazen-faced farlet. And, you know, we've put those into the first section. It goes on and on like that for 20 pages of just running these things together. The second section, we realized that each play had its own sort of character, and we organized the insults by play in the middle section in order to capture that character and allow people who are going to see a play or going to study a play to sort of get an overview of what those insults were and how they embodied the story of the play.
Is there any one character, you mentioned character, Cynthia, is there any one character in the sense of a fictional creation of William Shakespeare that you two have found to be the richest or one of the richest sources for Shakespeare's insults?
Well, I think there's so many that certainly Falstaff is the butt of many of them. They're brilliant ones that you.
Does that mean that
mountain of mad flesh, and you know they just go on with about him?
Politics as a sort of inspiration for. Is there an abstract source of the? Of the insults that Shakespeare has created?
Well, I think the third section actually addresses that question in that we've got a topical index. We've taken the main sort of aiming points that Shakespeare used for his insults and organized them topically in something called Ready Insults for Particular Occasions.
And, you know, useful indeed.
Eye catchers or one thing he really insulted quite a bit was windbaggery, and things like "thus he his special nothing ever prologues," or "why should she live to fill the world with words?" It's a very common thing.
You say really. "Why should she?" Is it true that Shakespeare was a misogynist? The feminist critics of recent years have made of. Well, you know, for one thing, they don't like these dead white males, and Shakespeare is, I suppose, the supreme dead white male. Is he an insulter of women?
I don't think so. I think that there are many female characters in his plays that are end up sort of more respected than the males in the plays. Portia.
Yes, and certainly there are many, many males who are insulted in the plays as well. So I think just to look at the insults and to start looking at who they're directed against or toward or in relation to puts men and women on a fair.
So they're fun just on their own terms, and then if you sort of think them through, they have a kind of a teaching function here.
That's right. They have a lot to do with everyday life, and the everyday life, of everybody, but it's a very important educational angle. It's not even an angle. It's an avenue. Into thinking about real life and making literature.
One of the things that's fun to try to figure out about Shakespeare is the essence of the creation, the essence of the mind that created the creations. Is it essentially tragic? Is it essentially comic? How do you fall on that? Your book, Shakespeare's Insults, is great fun, but do you think do they spring essentially from a grim view of our lives or from a happy view of our lives?
I think they're pretty poetic and realistic, but I don't think they're grim at all. I think that Shakespeare really used these as centers of interest in his plays, and if they had put people off, I don't suppose we'd be studying Shakespeare today.
Wayne? Right.
Well, no, I think that that life is full of the grim, and it's full of the joyous. Uh-huh. And to say that it's one or the other, or that a person has to be one or the other, isn't right at the center of things.
Do you base these insults, that is to say, the way you present them in your book, do you base them at all in Shakespeare's life? I mean, is this a reflection of the man himself, or do we go again to that notion that here was a mind that was so capacious and so creative that we don't really need to look at the circumstances of his own biography? How about that?
Well, I don't know that there's a real way of nailing them to anything. There's this evanescent Shakespeare, and how can you attach anything to what isn't really in front of you? So we're looking at the language, we're looking at what's left behind, and what its value is, and what its pleasures are, and so I don't think we're making a comment, really, about who Shakespeare is.
Are we imaginative in the modern world, Cynthia, when we pass insults back and forth? Kind of a variation on a question I asked you earlier. Does it get any better than Shakespeare when we look to what insults are?
I think we can learn a lot from Shakespeare. We all know the sort of half-dozen four-letter words that we hear every day on the streets. And Shakespeare is a way to expand our minds in terms of insults. And give us all a bit of humor as well. I know that one student avoided a fight by being able to say to a bully, you know, I would beat you, but it would infect my hands. And the kind of creative potential of these insults is far surpassing than anything that we have today.
Can I get you to engage in another exchange here of Shakespeare's insults? Again, we have name calling, we have insults for general use. What do you have in mind?
Well, you stale old mouse-eaten dry cheese.
You fill your vacancy with voluptuousness.
My love, your kisses are Judas's own children.
Oh, thank you very much, you disease of a friend.
You great-sized monster of ingratitude.
Pernicious bloodsucker of sleeping men.
Horse and beetle-headed flap-eared knave.
You fresh piece of excellent witchcraft.
You king of codpieces.
Now, the king of codpieces, is that as gritty and down and dirty as I think it is?
Well, it starts out in the... I think it kind of is, but it's... what can one say, you know, as the color rises? Yes, that's right. It's
This was a sort of the Elizabethan jockstrap, if I got this
that's right.
Right.
It's actually
a bit more prominent than that.
There was... This book made its way into one of the prisons where they keep juvenile offenders in Britain. And their teacher said, if you're going to curse, you're going to do it properly. So she brought in this book and taught these, what they call villains, their Shakespeare's insults. And they made the national news. There was a riot in the prison, and one of the students called the warden a king of codpieces.
Splashed across the Daily Mail. So that it's quite, you know, it turns out to be quite effective.
Wayne Hill and Cynthia Auchin, we're talking about your book, Shakespeare's Insults, Educating Your Wit. We've had a lot of fun with this. We'll come back and have another exchange here toward the end of our conversation. Right now, I want to touch on something fairly serious. Wayne, you've told me that this book is instrumental in conflict resolution. How about that?
Well, the book has been surprising at every point. It started as a surprise. The educational value of it is a surprise. Now we have people coming to us with a new proposition, and we intend to follow it up. And that is that following this sort of rationale, that at the center of dramatic action is conflict and conflict resolution, and sometimes not resolution, but conflict certainly, and that the language, the poetry of conflict in Shakespeare certainly is the insult. So here is a very funny bit of language that deals with conflict. And we know, and this is what school administrators, one on the West Coast, one on the East Coast, who've talked to us about this, say is a very pressing social concern in the schools, and that is violence in all sorts of forms.
So what do? You get these kids into sort of a modeling, a play-acting role, and tossing these insults around? Is that it?
Part of our educational pack already has a role-playing section in it that's been developed by a director from the National Theatre in London. And what these kids do is to toss the insults back and forth and really play the roles out of being insulted or being the insulter.
And that, what, creates a kind of barrier, and at the same time it teaches them what? It lays on them a layer of understanding somehow.
Well, it does that. It shows them the results, the consequences of the language that they use. But it also shows them how language can arm them. And I don't mean arm them in a cruel way, but prepares them, gives them skill for operating in the real world, where the ability to convince is, and the ability to assert one's presence and to get objects accomplished, depends a lot on verbal skills. And to teach people who otherwise wouldn't be taught how to stand and how to project a certain kind of personal worth and status by the way that one carries oneself and speaks is an exercise that comes out of this. The other part of it is that we take situations from the plays and stop them just short of the insult. And then we can analyze what happens afterwards as a result of the insult, and we start talking about when that intensity started to become irretrievable and what could have been done as an alternative.
My goodness, you are into philosophy, almost theology here after a fashion, are you not?
Well, that's right. We're still surprised at the breadth of it. We started out by going to a play, and that's all we did, and started into an argument, and and that's what got it all going. But it's much deeper, and I think typical of Shakespeare.
And the mere discussion of these insults brings up the ethical questions that you really can't avoid, and I think it's the perfect way to start talking about the ethics of the insult and respect for other people and sensitivity for others.
Wayne Hill and Cynthia Ochin, I want to thank you for coming to be on Soundings. But before we take our leave, does that sound Shakespearean? Let's have another exchange here of these wonderful Shakespearean insults. How about it?
Your horrid image doth unfix my hair.
Blasts and fogs upon thee.
Sell your face for 5 pence and 'tis dear.
That's a shield peas cod.
I never see thy face, but I think upon hellfire.
Fret till thy proud heart break.
You are the scarecrow that affrights our children so.
I do not like thy faults.
You sweat to death and lard the lean earth as you walk along.
Would that the fountain of your mind were clear again, that I might water an ass at it.
Your mind is tossing on the ocean.
You have not so much brain as earwax.
You're a fusty nut with no kernel.
You are the index and prologue to the history of lust and foul thoughts.
You have not so much brain as earwax.
Cynthia Ochin and Wayne Hill are the editors of Shakespeare's Insults, Educating Your Wit. Shakespeare's Insults is available from Mainsail Press. Stay tuned for information about writing for an audio cassette of this program. You're listening to Soundings, a magazine of ideas and insights from the National Humanities Center. I'm Wayne Pond. My guests this week were Cynthia Ochin and Wayne Hill of Cambridge University. For an audio tape of this discussion, send $10 to the National Humanities Center, Research Triangle Park, North Carolina. The zip code is 27709. Please ask for program number 738. That's program number 738. The address again is the National Humanities Center, Research Triangle Park, North Carolina. The zip code is 27709. Next week on Soundings, Fire and Light. Mississippi writer and former firefighter Larry Brown will be here to read from and talk about his new book, On Fire. Physicist Arthur Zients will also be on hand to discuss his new book, Catching the Light. Thanks for listening to Soundings. Our theme music is by Jeff Perry. Partial support for this program comes from Carolina Power and Light, where listening generates powerful ideas. Soundings is a cultural affairs service of the National Humanities Center.